WNST, Tassel Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a weekend of glorious football. Santa's coming next week as well, and we're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, putting it out on the road. I'll have the peppermint payouts. I will have the Oh Snap gingerbreads. I will even have the unscented Unwrap the Cash tickets when we make it out this week. We're going to be at Farr and Dotter. I'm wearing the I'm a Blunt shirt. I'm a Blunt Person shirt today. We're going to be at Curio Wellness and Farr and Dotter on Friday from about 1:30 to 5. We have a special crab cake. I'm going to keep it a surprise till we get there. It is not a surprise that Gina Schock from the Go-Go's will be joining us, as well as Drew Westervelt, who makes a product called Hex that I use on all my smarmy Planet Fitness and hot yoga gear. And we're also going to be joined by Michael Bronfine and Gina Schock of the Go-Go's on Friday. Monday, we move the show to Wise Markets and Honeygo. Going to be up there with Derek Frazier, former Maryland Stadium Authority Chairman Tom Kelso will be joining us finally after his illness to talk all things stadiums for dummies and all the movement or lack thereof in regard to the lease situation. And John Martin, Executive Director of the Maryland Lottery, also brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, as well as our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare. We got football this weekend. Speaking of the Maryland Lottery, the Ravens winners for the trip are headed to Jacksonville this week on the team plane. I told Seth Elkin when he did the show this week, I said, you know, it's fun going on the way down. It's like, you know, Seinfeld, like more of anything, more of everything. Lose a Sunday night football game and fly back at 2 o'clock in the morning. Things change. Certainly with San Francisco waiting on Christmas Day, Miami and questions there for Tyreek Hill. I mean, questions for a lot of teams about injuries, right? Like the Ravens had their own thing this week with Kyle Hamilton and Mark Andrews and the rest of them. They're not coming back, but Trevor Lawrence was sort of on the schneid. We got Miami with Tariq Hill. Big doings when star players might or might not be available this time of year.
The Ravens know that better than anyone with Lamar Jackson the last 2 years. I mean, we're in mid-December and Lamar Jackson is healthy and upright, which was not the case last year, was not the case 2 years ago. And that right there, before we talk about anything else that this football team has going for it right now, you lead with that. So, you know, we saw Justin Herbert go on IR, although the Chargers weren't going anywhere anyway. But it just speaks to what kind of year it's been around the league. I mean, take a look at the AFC North right now. I mean, Joe Flacco trying to help the Browns to a playoff spot. Who would have guessed that even a month ago, let alone talking about them beating the team that the Ravens are playing on Sunday night this past Sunday in the Jacksonville Jaguars, who have much to play for. A few weeks ago, they beat the Houston Texans. It looked like maybe that was the moment where the Jags kind of take off. You know, they've been solid throughout the year, but not to the same degree as Miami, but still that team where you're waiting to see, okay, where's that signature win? Where's that moment where they're really going to take off and prove themselves? And keep in mind, this is a team that made the playoffs last year. This is a team that competed in Kansas City, and they haven't really taken that next step that you would have thought. And certainly we talk about the Trevor Lawrence injury here that looked like it was going to be way worse than it was. He did play last week, but threw three interceptions. And their defense that through the first 2 months of the season was looking like one of the better ones in the NFL, it's really fallen off here over the last 6 weeks or so. So it's still a team that's leading the AFC South. It's still a team that has much to play for, but you have the Ravens coming in who right now in mid-December, and we know the Super Bowl is not played right now, but it's the best team in the AFC. I don't think it's terribly close right now as it looks right now. The Ravens are the top team in the AFC. They're the number one seed right now. Jacksonville, this is one. Yeah, having talked to some people down there, they're really, really needing this one, I think, not just in terms of the standings and playoff positioning, but I think for under the hood. I think that they need this one from a mental standpoint, from a psychological standpoint. So it's going to be interesting to see what Jacksonville team shows up. And for the Ravens, hey, I just gave them some praises, but they have to keep winning, right? I mean, they have work to do to continue to be in the number one spot and secure home field and the first round bye. So plenty on the line here, but I think for the Ravens, another great opportunity to continue to maintain control atop the AFC.
As one of our visiting listeners, John Keller, one of my high school friends, will be in town this weekend to witness the holidays and Ravens. But he wrote to me on Monday. He's like, you guys didn't talk enough about Kyle Hamilton. I said, I don't know whether he's going to be hurt, whether he's not going to be hurt. I think when we spoke, all day on Monday, we kind of believed he would not play this week, and at the very least, and we're concerned that it may be worse than that. He's a big deal in their defense, and certainly against a good quarterback. They haven't played enough good quarterbacks this year. He's going to be a big deal in that. They may have really escaped something pretty serious with him because he's kind of an unreplaceable part of that defense.
He really is, and I even wrote this a couple weeks ago before he got hurt, that other than Roquan Smith, I think you could make a strong argument that Kyle Hamilton might be the second best player on this defense. And even if you want to rank, you know, I mean, certainly there's other candidates. Justin Madubuike comes to mind immediately. Jadeveon Clowney's been that good for them rushing off the edge. But Hamilton's versatility, to your point, the fact that you have a guy who can play deep in coverage, has played so much at the nickel. I mean, the nickel has been his best spot 2 years into his career. And I don't mean that he can't play further away from the line of scrimmage, but he's just so dynamic. I mean, tackles for loss, he set, it's kind of an arbitrary record, but Ed Reed had the franchise record for tackles for a loss for a defensive back, which you think DBs, I mean, they're not playing towards the line of scrimmage, but he broke that record last week. And I think we saw firsthand when you saw the splits in terms of what the yards per play and explosive plays allowed without him on the field this past week compared to when he was on the field against the Rams, it was striking. So the good news, it's a minor MCL sprain. He practiced on Wednesday. Now, I'll say this, he was limited. I did not see him going into teamwork as they ushered the media off the field for the viewing portion of practice as it concluded. But the fact that he was even on the field on Wednesday, I was surprised by that. I thought based on what we had heard, based on how it looked on Sunday, based on how John Harbaugh talked about it on Monday, I thought maybe it was a 10% chance that he might play against Jacksonville. But the fact that he was on the field at the beginning of the practice week, albeit limited, certainly gives him a much better chance of being out there on Sunday night. And to your point, you look at Jacksonville right now, obviously they're missing Christian Kirk, who's their big, big time producer at slot receiver. He's on IR right now. So they don't have that devastating option at tight end. I mean, they have some, you know, Evan Engram's solid, but you think about San Francisco the following week, George Kittle, and what that offense can do. I think the Ravens certainly want Hamilton out there for San Francisco, but the fact that he's already practicing, you're not going to dismiss him for Sunday night, but he's so important. You do want to err on the side of caution. In fact, even talked to him on Wednesday after practice, and he wanted to go back in again before the medical staff said, hey, let's shut it down. You know, we don't think you're too hurt, but let's not push the envelope. You know, let's not push it too much here with your knee. And
where's Allen Iverson would say, we're talking practice.
Right. But I think for him, and I talked to him for a moment after the scrum at his locker broke up. Interestingly enough, the one game he missed last year was against Jacksonville. I pointed that out to him and he said, yeah, believe me, I know my teammates are saying that I'm trying to duck Trevor Lawrence, which was funny to hear him say that, but it's a tough kid. During the bye week, Chris Hewitt, their secondary coach, made the comment and said, don't let the baby face fool you. And you know, he's a good looking guy, right? He said, he'll try to rip your face off. And they, all of his teammates talk about how easygoing he is off the field and how mild mannered he is off the field, but he's got an intensity to him that is underrated, that you don't normally think about with defensive backs, but he certainly has that and he plays with that. So great news that he avoided a much more serious injury, but we'll see about Sunday night. But certainly he's in play for Sunday night, which 2 days ago, if you had asked me that, I would not have anticipated that being the case. So, you know, it speaks again to, yeah, we can talk about Dobbins at the beginning of the year. We can talk about Marlon Humphrey on and off the field, Marcus Williams on and off the field. You know, Mark Andrews, we'll see if he's back at some point in January. I mean, they haven't ruled that out, but
don't leave Ronnie Stanley out of that. I don't think you said him.
Well, sure. I was just kind of running through the guys that have missed extensive time. You know, Stanley hasn't missed a ton of time. He just hasn't been as good that's just been the reality for him. But point is, they've been much more fortunate from an injury health standpoint than the last couple of years. There's no question about that. And again, looks like the Ravens really dodged a bullet with the Kyle Hamilton injury.
Yeah, these 2 weeks on the road, and I'm really intrigued by all of this. And I think I mentioned this on Monday, but I want to mention it again because you and I don't usually get together later on in the week and sort of preview the games. That's been you and Dennis for the most part this season. I think with them, this part of the schedule that, and I had Seth Elkin on this week from the Maryland Lottery, who's a Steelers fan, and I was wondering whether that game's going to have meaning for the Ravens or not. You know, like right this minute, you're like, they're the one, they're the best, they're the best, they're the best. Well, you're the best, or you go on the road and play two playoff teams. I mean, not good team, playoff teams. Jacksonville and San Francisco are going to play playoff games. They both think they're going to host playoff games, by the way. So they're that good. They're not 7-6 good. They're better than that. And in Jacksonville's case, Houston, Indianapolis, who's coming to catching them? You know, like you start to think like, well, they have to win the division. They're going to be in the playoffs. They might be the team the Ravens see here 4 or 5 weeks from now. And you start to measure this thing and see how good they are at 10-3. And I think you and I went through this at the beginning on Monday morning saying, we haven't had a lot of 10-3s around here. Like they, you know, this, they're really good. They're much better than they've been. Lamar's better than he's been. And I think to myself, well, if they're better, they never win these games, Luke. In 28 years, they've never gone on the road in December and won a game against the first place AFC team and the number one seed in the NFC on Christmas night. And if they pull this off and they win both of these games and they're 12-3 on December 26th, then they probably are in a position where beat Miami and you take 2 weeks off if you want to. You don't have to play Pittsburgh. But I would think to myself, if they got to play Pittsburgh and it means something at this point, Pittsburgh will make them pay for it. You know, they'll be in the fourth quarter of an eye gouge game at the end of the end of the end where the Browns and Bengals are playing each other simultaneously because that's the way the scheduling will work on that day. And so I just started to think about, we're getting close to the end here, the last quartile, as Coach Billick would say. And three of the four teams are very, very good. And the Ravens have a very, very good record, and they're padded to some degree. They can lose two or three of these, but if they don't, then they really do ascend into that area where we talk about the 06 team or the 19 team. We're saying this is the best regular season team ever. And you don't get to many Christmases with that opportunity, and especially with the health. But you're also looking down the gauntlet of three playoff games, two on the road to begin with. They will really be tested here by New Year's Day to say, are they 10-6? 11-5, or are they gangbusters? Because they certainly feel to be, and as we talk about them, and I thought about this when I was putting my Royal Farms coffee in. I'm like, Luke and I are going to be talking about how good they are right now. I wonder if 2 weeks from now we're still going to be speaking of them in those same terms because they have a royal opportunity here on national TV, on the road, to really put the purple flag down and say, we're the best team. We're, you know, come get us in January. We're going to rest. We're the best team. They'll have that. They'll be able to prove it to everybody the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it during the bye week, looking at the final third of the schedule, and we said that if they were going to be the number one seed, they certainly were going to earn it because of the schedule that they do have. So, I think for me, and you mentioned what happens if, you know, the worst would happen and you're 10-6 going, and they haven't been that all year, right? I mean, they've won 7 of 8. They haven't lost back-to-back games. I mean, that would be so out of character for this team. That's how good they've been from start to finish. I mean, even early in the year, when, okay, I get it. They lost to Indianapolis. They lost to Pittsburgh. But this is a team that has been very consistent. This is a team that's been good on the road. And they might not have to play on the road, but as a result of being so good on the road in the regular season. I mean, that can be your reward for being a good road team. But you're right. I mean, they have quite a challenge here over these next 3 weeks. But they have a heck of an opportunity here where they've given themselves some cushion. I mean, you're one up on Miami, you're two up on Kansas City and Jacksonville. So, you know, they're two up on the Browns for the division lead. So they've given themselves a little bit of cushion here, but everything about their performance, you know, I'm not concerned about this team losing three in a row. Does that mean I'm guaranteeing that they're going to win these last four games? No, of course not. It's a challenging schedule, but guess what? Jacksonville knows they have a heck of a challenge on Sunday night. San Francisco, who has looked like the best team in the NFL over the last month, they're looking at their schedule and saying, Baltimore's our biggest test left. And everyone's going to say that might be a Super Bowl preview. And certainly Miami, who hasn't beaten anyone this year. I mean, look at the Dolphins' strength of victory. It's last in the AFC. We've talked about the Ravens and, at times maybe not having the toughest schedule in terms of quarterbacks they've faced. Miami hasn't beaten anyone of ilk. I mean, they've beaten up on patsies. I mean, that's kind of how it's been for them. They're looking at that game as far, and they're probably praying that one Tyreek Hill's healthy and other guys that have been banged up for them is healthy, but they're hoping that the weather isn't too harsh on New Year's Eve, knowing what kind of style the Dolphins want to play with. So, I mean, yeah, the Ravens have a challenging schedule here, but they're incredibly challenging for everyone that's going to play them. I mean, that's just where it is right now. So, like I said, for Jacksonville, there's a heck of a lot of urgency here because when they beat Houston on the road a couple weeks back, I think there was a thought for them, and I know talking to some Jacksonville media types, that that was the moment they were going to take off. And think about it. They had the Bengals without Joe Burrow and then the Browns without Deshaun Watson. And they lost those two games. They kind of failed their honorary AFC North membership test. That puts them in a position where the bye is an uphill climb at best for them at this point in time. And now they're facing the Ravens and they want to make sure they hold on to the division because, the Colts and the Texans are both 7-6 right on their heels. So they have a lot to play for, but these last couple of weeks, they lost a lot of traction in terms of really staking their claim as maybe one of the one or two or best, one or two best teams in the AFC. So it's a lot on the line for them. But at the same time, the Ravens, so much to play for. And to your point, I don't think it's a driving force to clinch the number one seed before week 18, but you want to put as much separation as you can between yourself and the rest of the field to try to get that number one seed, to have that first round bye. And for this team, guys like Lamar, guys like Marlon Humphrey, those guys who were here in 2019, they were part of a 14-2 team that completely ran away with it. And we saw what happened in January. So there is, I think, a little bit of a redemption tour in the back of their mind that, hey, take care of business in this last quarter of the schedule. It's going to leave them very battle tested one way or the other, right? So take advantage and then they come out of it. And if they're the number one seed, I think they're going to feel really confident about their ability to take care of business this time around because of how challenging this last quarter of the schedule really is.
You and I got into it with Lamar this week a little bit. And, from the beginning, you've been more praising of Lamar and the statistics and all of that. I have been more like he runs in the linebackers. That was always my line. He hasn't run in the linebackers, but he looks different this year. And I've pointed that out. We pointed that out at length on Monday. Thoughts about Lamar in at this point and things he still has to prove because as I pointed out when I wrote about him on this week, still hasn't won a game in January. He won one game in January. Can't do that until January, so we can't hold him responsible for that. The inaccuracy of long balls, sailing balls happens to lots of quarterbacks, but this is the time of the year when you're in a tight game, you have to hit Odell Beckham the one time you get him open deep. He did that against the Rams the other day, made big plays when breakdowns happened. He read them. Lamar and his health and where they are and the bright lights for Lamar, especially the next 2 weeks, end of year, holidays are out, eggnog is out, Christmas night, the whole world's going to watch that football game. These are the next two games for me that put them in a position to be in that driver's seat that we're all talking bye week and number one. This is where he has to play his best football for, this is turning the lights on a $55 million a year quarterback to say, all right, he's going to have to win. He's going to have to go in the phone booth and win some of these games. And he's going to have to be the best player on the field in some of these games. I'm fascinated because I think he's more prepared to be that than he's ever been, where it was run right, run left, make him miss you, sleight of hand, all of that. That's a part of his game. And they can play that game if they're down 10 points and maybe it works. But I don't. They haven't been down 10 points much. And one of these games, they're going to get behind and they're going to have to play a little differently. I just think this is a beautiful test for Lamar, especially for the detractors of Lamar. And I don't think I'm a detractor. I think I've been a realist about it. But even the people that hate him are going to have to, fess up if they're 14-3, and he's going into these games and coming out with 300-yard passing games, clean sheets, nice victories, taking good care of the football. The things that he's done, the reason they're 10-3, quite frankly, for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, first of all they've done is win in the regular season with him as quarterback. And okay, I get it. He hasn't won in January, but guess what? John Harbaugh hasn't won anything in January in a long time. Mark Andrews hasn't won anything in January. Marlon Humphrey, it is a collective effort, but it is funny how, and that's why they make the big bucks. It's attached to the quarterback when you come up short, even though there are lots of things that they came up short in doing back in 19 against the Titans and against Buffalo the following year. And obviously Lamar hasn't been on the field the last couple of years. So, but you're right. I mean, it's a great test for him. It's a great test for this entire football team. Anything he's going to do over the next 4 weeks, certainly you can think about it through the backdrop of the MVP conversation, because, you know, I think Dak Prescott's probably leading that right now. Brock Purdy's right there, but there's no one running away with it. So people have continued to mention Lamar Jackson because, hey, the Ravens are, you know, he's the best player on the best team in the AFC. I mean, that's kind of how this works, specifically talking about the quarterback position. But yeah, I don't think Lamar needs to go out there and throw four touchdowns for the Ravens to beat Jacksonville, but they need their quarterback playing at a very high level over these last four games that are going to mean so much to them in terms of trying to secure the number one seed, trying to secure first round bye, making sure that nothing happens in terms of the AFC North at the very least. So it's a great opportunity for him. And, you know, I think, you know, you mentioned he's better equipped. I mean, what quarterback, unless we're talking about someone who is fighting off father time, you know, in the way that you talked about Tom Brady at age 43, you know, what quarterback isn't going to be better equipped the more experience he has? I'll go back to the post-game quote that Odell Beckham had, experience is the best teacher. And I think that's the case for Lamar. I think that's the case for this entire era of, you know, this Ravens roster going back to 2018. These guys have had a lot of regular season success, and they've had a lot of postseason disappointment. I mean, that's kind of been the story. So none of these games are going to change the latter part until you actually get to the postseason. But you go on the road and you can beat Jacksonville, especially if you can go on the road and beat San Francisco, who, like I said, is probably gets the nod, at least over the last month, looking like the best team in the NFL. You go home and you take care of business against Miami. Or if you at least win two of those three games, let's say, and then you take care of business against Pittsburgh in week 18, and who knows what the Steelers are going to look like at that point. I mean, they look like they're not just circling the drain, they're going down the drain the last couple of weeks. I mean, it's how bad it's been in Pittsburgh. But you do that and you're in position, number one seed, hey, it's go time. You know, you're back where you were 4 years ago. You know, we talked about it at that point in time when they lost to Tennessee. There was such a sentiment at that point that I understood, because fans are all trying to make themselves feel better because it was that disappointing. I mean, it was as disappointing as going back to losing to Indy back in the 06 postseason. That's how stunning and disappointing and crushing that was. But everyone said at the time, what? Well, they were ahead of schedule. They'll be back. This is a young team. And we've seen how the last 4 years have played out. COVID, no one could have possibly envisioned that happening and the impact that had across the league. Injuries, you know, just the contract situation with Lamar. I mean, all the different things you can talk about, they have such a great chance here to be back right in the same spot they were 4 years ago, being the number one seed, having the bye. And I get it. But, you know, the bye is not a requisite for winning the Super Bowl, but it eliminates a game that you have to win. You know, I mean, it's
I'm
just
trying to eliminate
math.
The Steelers game. Literally, I'm trying to eliminate
sure.
that right now. They're playing to have 2 weeks off.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that'll be another debate. If we're talking about them clinching in week 17, and not having anything to play for in week 18, it'll be interesting to see how they approach that compared to how they approached it back 4 years ago and all that, you know, the rust versus rest debate and all that. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. But if they're in that position and they put themselves in that position to have that opportunity, if they can do that, then you'd like to think, not just Lamar, but all these guys, coaching staff included, that they will handle this better and they will be in a position to take advantage and make a deep run and have a chance to go to a Super Bowl. Because look at the rest of the AFC right now. Again, I mentioned Miami hasn't beaten anyone of note all year. Kansas City. I mean, this past week kind of felt like And I'm going to use a pro wrestling term for you, Nestor, and you'll appreciate this. This moment with the Chiefs complaining about Tony being offside and all the whining and Mahomes throwing a fit and Andy Reid whining after the game, that kind of felt like the Chiefs' heel turn to me in terms of, I think back to the Patriots back in 01, 02, 03, they were still kind of, Belichick was never really likable, but Brady was back then, right? I mean,
well,
they
even, hey, when the Tuck game happened, Brady was a baby face and the Raiders were the
right,
bad
that's
guys,
what I'm saying.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, they were the baby face through that, you know, with, people were happy that they won it because the Rams had already won, right? So, but this moment, this past week, kind of felt like the Chiefs' heel turn in that way because, you know, they came across as such babies about that. I mean, it was the right call. It was an obvious call. But the point is the Chiefs are struggling, and we'll see where they are in a month. And I'm not counting them out. Let's be clear about that. I've been the guy saying Kansas City is still the team to beat. And in the ceremonial sense, in the practical sense, as far as the experience they have, yeah, I'm not dismissing them whatsoever. But you look at all these other teams in the AFC, they all have flaws. And I'd say they all have flaws that are more concerning than the Ravens' flaw right now, quite frankly. I mean, yeah, you can talk about the Ravens' postseason experience. You could say the same exact thing about every other team in the conference other than the Chiefs. You know, Buffalo, are they even going to get in? You know, okay, Buffalo's won a little bit more than the Ravens in January, but they have to get in and it's going to be tough for them to get in, even if I think they're still really good and dangerous if they do. So all these teams are dealing with something. So boy, you look at the Ravens right now and you just say, okay, I get it. Losing Mark Andrews, that stinks. And, you know, we'll see if, you know, we'll see if they can, he can come back for the AFC championship game. And no J.K. Dobbins, I get it. And they've had some other guys injured here and there, but they're mostly intact as a football team. And their MVP caliber quarterback is healthy, which a lot of teams in the conference cannot say right now. And, you know, they're ascending. I mean, they've won seven of their last eight. It's tough to, okay, I get it. They won in overtime against the Rams. It wasn't their most dominant performance of the year, especially defensively, you know, where they had their issues for once. But boy, I just don't know how you can't look at this team right now compared to the rest of the NFL and not feel really, really good about where they are. And hey, they've got to go out and win. You know, if they stub their toe on Sunday night, then we're having a different conversation next week as they're getting ready for the 49ers on Christmas night. But I think there's every reason to be really excited and really optimistic about where this football team is going. But they've got to go out and handle their business. And that begins on Sunday night. Like I said, I think against a very desperate Jacksonville team to right the last couple of weeks and make sure that they secure their division title and their opportunity to get into the playoffs.
Jacksonville Jaguars, we're heading down there. Luke is going to be heading out to Owings Mills next week for some holiday eggnog cheers. The Ravens do two in a row on the road, two in a row on national television. And, you know, happy holidays, everybody. We're going to do two in a row for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Friday. We're going to be doing it for the very first time at a dispensary. We're going to be at Far and Daughter. We're going to have a delicious crab cake that I've been waiting to have. The guy that owns this joint has been hitting me for years, saying, I got the, before I had a crab cake tour, he was, I got the best crab cake. So Friday, we're going to have crab cake at Far and Daughter. Also going to be joined by Drew Westervelt from Hex. Makes detergent, local company, getting all the stinkiness out of all of my sweaty gear from Planet Fitness and from my hot yoga classes, as well as Gina Shock, rock and roll hero from Dundalk and rock and roll Hall of Famer from the Go-Go's. She's going to join us on Friday for her annual holiday eggnog turn. We're going to talk some drumming and some rock and roll. That's going to be at Far and Daughter. I'll be giving away the Raven Scratch-Offs, the Peppermint Payout, the O-Snap gingerbreads that smell like gingerbread. Sometimes Foreign Daughter smells a little different in there. I'll bring in the O-Snap scents in there, and then we have the unscented Unwrap the Cash tickets as well. Our friends at Window Nation, 86690Nation, reminding you, buy two, get two free 0% financing through the holidays. If you're feeling that draft coming in, that snow earlier in the week, you need new windows. It certainly saved me a lot of money on my gas electric bill the last year and a half. I need to work on some doors. I'm going to call 86690Nation at Window Nation to talk some doors for 2024. Also, our friends at Jiffy Lube Multicare, always taking care of you. My little light came on the other day. It's oil time again. I got to get my oil changed. I'm going to Jiffy Lube, Jiffy Lube Multicare, so make sure you're doing that. Monday, we're going to be back at Wise Markets. We're going to be up at Honey Go, eggnog, ham, kielbasa sauerkraut, apple pie, cinnamon ice cream. Maybe some green bean casserole. I'm trying to think if I left anything else out. We're going to have lots of Oh, all sorts of snacks and goodies, all sorts of bonbons, Christmas goodies. We're going to be at the Wise at Honeygoat. We're going to be joined. And I'm about to get into this just for a minute with Luke, the Maryland Stadium Authority former chairman, Tom Kelso. We saw the current chairman, who is too detained to come on the show and answer any questions, but was on stage giving the Baltimore Ravens and giving Sashi Brown, who took my press credential, $480 million, I think was the number, to Bill premium, 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 premium in the perimeter, perimeter, perimeter. We all know the beer is colder and the hot dogs just taste better inside the perimeter. And I can't wait for them to have a perimeter so they can sell the PSL that they took from me that they're trying to get rid of and the $3 tickets the other day. Luke, the stadium thing, I want to talk to you about it for just a minute because I'm going to talk to Tom Kelso on Monday at Wise Markets. We're also going to have Derek Frazier on. You mentioned wrestling. Derek Frazier's been all over the world as a wrestler, so we're going to have him on as well. And John Martin's going to come out and talk Maryland Lottery scratch-offs and the big holiday week and stocking stuffers and stockings hung by the chimney with care and all that. All I want for Christmas is a new baseball owner. Luke, I don't think we're getting a new baseball owner right now. I think the information that leaked last week may have been targeted and useful for a certain hockey and basketball owner that's been trying to move his team across the river into Virginia. Ted Leonsis was in the news. Dude, there is more bouja going on here all the way around, from the timing of the Ravens press conference to stick it to the Orioles being completely out to lunch, to both of these teams being very good. Can you imagine if the Ravens are 3-10 and talking about their premium hot dogs and the Orioles are losing 110 games and talking about turning down $600 million to basically fix the place up the way the Ravens just showed it off with Gensler over the week? We're at a really interesting time. You're more than a fan, you're an educated journalist. You don't have the same interest in gold-plated black wing clubs that the government's going to buy for the Ravens to charge more money, which is essentially what's happening. All of it is incredibly gross as a taxpayer and as somebody that cheered for this and rooted for this and, put on to get the first stadium built and then put on to get the second stadium built. And I've been at this my whole life. These teams are despicable. They're run by despicable humans. And if you watch these press conferences and the lack of gratitude during the holiday season for getting 500, I mean, everybody on the stage is making their money off the public titty at this point. When you're getting $500 million from the state, Brad Downs, that is your salary. Sashi Brown, that's where you're $2.3 million a year to be the president of this op. That's where all of this is coming from. It's coming from us, from taxpayers, and from $20 beers and $14 specialty hot dogs with some crappy crab dip on it, So I keep looking at this, and I love sports. I built my life around sports. I cheered for these stadia, but this is a scam. I mean, this is an unbelievable scam at 55 years of age that I'm watching, and one that the baseball owner is not even willing to accept and put his tickets on sale for next year while we sit here and talk about relief pitching and will we sign Gunnar Henderson? I mean, I feel such instability with Major League Baseball and the franchise itself that there's no cohesion going on here, and everybody's afraid of John Angelos. I've learned that, but me. But me, everybody's afraid of John Angelos, but me.
I mean, it's what the term, what corporate welfare for private profit. I mean, that's kind of what we're seeing. And look, that's not unique to the state of Maryland. It's the NFL. Look at some of the stadiums that are being replaced at this point in time. These are contemporary in terms of when they were built. I mean, the Titans are going to build a new stadium. I mean, you think back to whatever they're calling it these days. I still think Adelphia Coliseum because that's what it was when the Ravens and Titans rivalry was at its peak. But you look at stadium in the NFL, it's you used to think in terms of at least 30 or 40 years, and now it's becoming more like barely over 20, 20 or 25. It's what we're seeing. And look, this is not a discussion that can be had in a few minutes to really do it justice. And I would be lying to you if I could say I was as well versed as I really needed to be. But this public funding, state funding that goes to stadia around the country, unfortunately, it's the cost of doing business. Because if you don't do it, the fear is all it takes is one other market to do it, and then, well, you have what is happening, what's happened in the NFL a number of times over the last 25 years, including Cleveland coming to Baltimore, over a quarter century ago.
Well, let's just take the next 3 weeks. Jacksonville, slum of a stadium. They're gonna leave that market. They are between them and the Chargers. They are primed, and they're never gonna fix it. They're never gonna fix it. I mean, Jacksonville is what it is. It's been there 30 years. I mean, that's a Paul Tagliabue production there, and so they're never gonna fix that. And then next week we have San Francisco. That's not even San Francisco. It's in Santa Clara. If you've been to that stadium, it's the strangest thing. It's in the middle of a pasture next to a light rail stop in the middle of Silicon Valley, literally in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of like an industrial park with a stadium in it. And the stadium's not very good. It's not very nice. It's got all suites on one side and a bowl of something else on the other side. It's 45 miles from San Francisco. It's just very weird. But it got done, and the league's happy. The league has two teams in L.A., and they just gave another Super Bowl to L.A. day before yesterday, right? So this West Coast thing that they've done, and then Miami, you go down there, it looks like it's – you feel like you're in Europe. It's a European-style stadium where they spent a buttload of money turning that from Joe Robbie, where they played lousy Marlins baseball games, into something that, looks like a place that Messi will play. You know what I mean? Like, it has a different – it's still crappy. I mean, the Miami Stadium's awful. I mean, the Miami Gardens where the Dolphins play, it's not much. But we see these other stadiums we go into. Yeah, Raven Stadium's pretty much unchanged over 30 years, really. I mean, television sets and an escalator, but, it's the same experience. And that's not going to change either. All they're basically taking $500 million to do is to build an indoor sports bar so that you stop tailgating and go in and get your beer inside the perimeter where it's always colder. Dude, I'm never going to let that go. I don't even know who that smarmy prick was up on stage. I really don't. But when I heard that, I was like, oh, I had my coffee. I'm like, did he just say that to Baltimore people? Some bureaucrat prick that's making a couple hundred grand a year off of this money, he's going to drink in out of this $480 million of our money and sit there and talk to me about selling me better hot dogs and colder beer. I mean, dude, read the room, you prick. Read the room. And then they call the media. And there's Sashi up there waving after throwing me out after 30 years and empty seats all through the press conference. I mean, there's nobody there to ask a question. And that's the way they want it. That's the way they like it, where they're hiding.
The beer's colder for them because they're going to make more money that way. I mean, look, I mean, I said this to you when we talked about this just a couple of days ago. I mean, look, this is not anything that was shocking or surprising. We knew this was coming. I mean, there was $600 million earmarked for both the Ravens and then the Orioles whenever they sign a lease.
You know what it looks like when I looked at it? It looks just like Green Bay. Like, and you know what I mean? Like, you've been to Green Bay.
Yeah.
They have an atrium and a Christmas tree. It's cold as hell in Green Bay, right? So they built it to get people inside to be warm. Literally, it's almost like a ski lodge. I mean, literally, when you're there, it's almost like a ski lodge in Green Bay. It looked just like Green Bay to me. It just looked like they took the Green Bay bar and atrium, and it's going to be beautiful. I mean, and it's beautiful in Green Bay. When I looked at the plans, that's if anybody's seen Green Bay or been there, it's the closest. I've been to all the stadiums, so have you. Most of them that you've been to, at least, you've been to more than three quarters of them. This is that design for me. So I recognized it.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, it'll be nice, but the point I made to you, and I said this more speaking as someone who had season tickets years and years ago and went to games years and years ago as a fan, I go and cover games now. So I haven't been.
Well, it's a good thing you stopped buying the tickets. Cause if you didn't buy the tickets, Chad would throw you out. I mean, I got thrown out cause I bought the tickets. I had the audacity to buy my ticket. That was the first warning shot that I was getting thrown out. How dare you buy tickets and sit in your seats where you see the game better? Like, don't buy tickets, whatever you do.
But the point I was trying to make, though, is for someone who enjoys the, traditional way of going to a football game, which is you have your tickets, but you tailgate, right? Whether it's in the lot or you go to a local establishment, right? I mean, that's the thing you do. You go to one of the bars in Fed Hill, walk across bridge, go to the game. You know, a lot of people do that, or you tailgate in your parking spot. You know, for most of what they were selling as far as the renovations, you know, that felt much more upper class, right? You know, if you have more and more disposable income, which God bless if you do, I'm not judging that. But what they were selling and what they're branding this, you know, these renovations and upgrades for, it felt like those folks who aren't on the same kind of budget, right? You know, they don't
Yeah,
have a
they're
budget.
going to fix your experience and make your experience more premium. No, they're not. They're just going to separate you from your wallet. This isn't about making the experience of the game better for you. This is about trying to find ways to sell, to make your $18 beer $25.
And the reality is, the NFL did not get to this point in time where it is right now, which is head and shoulders above the rest of major American professional sports, by thinking about the common fan. They've done the opposite. I mean, heck, we're now flexing Thursday night and Monday night games. I mean, we've got to, even though we're not seeing it yet, they have the ability to do that now. So, you know, that
They
for
don't even
those
care about
fans,
their own players. Why do they care about the fans?
sure. Yeah, it's all about making money. And look, I mean, that's, again, that's not a rate unique to the Ravens. That's how it works around the league. And you
But that
know,
being said, I'll push
it,
back on this in saying tickets were $3 on Sunday, and 30,000 people chose to not use their tickets to see a 10-3 team play. It wasn't 38 and raining, dude. It was 60 and raining.
it was, yes, and I will fully acknowledge the forecast ended up being a nice break, but the forecast was lousy. I mean, it was supposed to be pouring rain the entire day. I get it. 38 compared to 60, you're right. At the same time, let's not act like on paper that forecast looked like that was going to be any kind of
My point is the game
good
lasts 3
experience.
hours. It's always on a Sunday. People go to church. People get there. The people at tailgate want to tailgate. The people that want to pay premium prices and be premium, premium, premium and have the better hot dogs and the colder beer, they're already doing it. Where are they finding these people? Where's Chad Steele and Brad Downs going and finding the $25 beer holder and finding more people to sit in the silver seats that they can't find anyway, and finding more people to insult, like car dealers that you and I know who had skyboxes and then were chased out of their skyboxes quietly. So, like, I just, they're looking for a crowd that does not exist in Baltimore. I have served this marketplace for 39 years. Chad Steele's not from here, which is one of the reasons he threw me out, because he doesn't know any better. And all of the people, one of the problems the Ravens have, and I haven't said this enough out loud, and if I had time with Steve Bisciotti and I wrote, I could write him a letter anytime. Maybe I'll write him another letter. DaCosta still has one coming. He's got a steamer coming for me, my friend in the holiday season, Eric DaCosta. But one of the problems they have out there is they have too many smarmy out-of-town pricks working there and not enough local people. All of these guys don't say, we're a premium this and hot dogs and beer. And I'm thinking, who is your customer? Who's buying this? You've already got all of that. You got a club. You got purple lights. You got Lenny Moore on the wall. You got bonbons. You got chocolate-dipped strawberries. You got all of that. You got a 10-3 football team. Yeah, you got everything. And the tickets were $3 because it rained a little and it was 60 degrees. Who is this? Who's filling this place and giving you $23 for a beer and $12 for a lousy hot dog on a Sunday at 11:30 in the morning? Who is it? Who is it? I've been watching this league for 30 years. I've gone all around the league, cold weather, warm weather, indoor, outdoor, good teams, bad teams, crappy owners, good owners, nice stadiums, Oakland. You know, I've been everywhere. Where are these people? Where in Ruxton? Where are they getting these people that are going to be a part of the Gold Club Premium? I mean, everybody talks about trying to find rich people to give them money, premium seats at the CFG Bank Arena. And that's a factor of John Mayer and Kiss wanting premium prices, right? I mean, literally, right? The artist makes all the money in that, much like Lamar Jackson's making all the money on the field, right? I am just blown away that I agree, great product, great league. We all love it. We all love it. We all love it. Nobody's going. And that's not this week, last year. I go back to Joe Flacco getting his bell rung by Kiko Alonso 5, 6 years ago when I see him out there playing and thinking there was nobody there that night. And then there was COVID. And Most of the time, there's lots of empty seats. Most of the time, except when the Lions come to town or a team that buys 10 or 12,000 of the tickets, there are lots of empty seats and tickets are readily available for $10, $20 on game day. It's very rarely. There's one game a couple weeks ago where the price held up. The Detroit game had held up, and there was one other game. I don't remember what game it was where tickets kind of like were $75, were like a regular price. And they're talking premium, premium, premium. And I don't, if I'm in there, and they wouldn't want me in there because they don't want anybody. If I'm in there, I'd be honest, sitting in the boardroom, and he said, "Hey, you're gonna build all this shit. Who's coming? You better start marketing. You better get Chad Steele out of here, who's throwing out media members and intimidating everybody else that's left. You better start marketing your team to people who have this money, that are gonna come give it to you. You better find those people." Because it's not the people I see at the games. It's not young people that want to pay 25. Young people get they go to Curio and get a gummy and drink water the rest of the day. I remember we used to sneak stuff in. You can't do that anymore. But like, nobody's going into that stadium with a $200 budget to buy concessions on a Sunday. It's not who their fans are. And I don't. That's the part that's weird. But I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. Like, well, state gave them $500 million. They need to do something with it. They can't buy fans with it, so they're gonna buy gold. They're gonna buy bars, bar taps. I don't know, bricks, bathrooms that flush. I'm just wondering. None of that has anything to do with the football I know and you know, and their fan base knows. They're in fantasy land, dreaming up this businessman who's going to come down and unload his wallet at 9 o'clock in the morning by standing in some bar on a 60-degree rainy day instead of selling his tickets for $3 and staying at home and watching it on the online in the comfort of their home, where the beer isn't as cold and the hot dogs couldn't possibly be as good, but they'll be outside the perimeter. I mean, I see all of this and I see no marketing plan. I go back to John Angelo's. You want billions of dollars to build. So you're going to build something. What are you going to build? The same thing the Ravens are building that nobody's going to come to?
I mean, I don't have anything to add other than, I'll think back to what my experience was as a early to mid 20 something that tailgate, go in. I would buy typically one beer inside, and then, I mean, you had to work the next day. You had to get home. Like there's all of that. So there was the tailgate experience in the morning, which I did not have a $200 budget to go inside the perimeter of a hypothetical perimeter that will now exist around the stadium to do those kind of things. But, beer was cheaper. And by the way, it wasn't just hot dogs. Some of our tailgates, we had all kinds of different stuff. We had themes every week. I mean, there was always that kind of thing. So yeah, the idea of clubs and put new coats of paint. Look, I mean, there's going to be plenty of upgrades and things like that of a stadium that's just 25 years old and needs those upgrades, to your point, flushing toilets and they're going to expand the concourse in the upper deck, which is a good thing for those sitting up there who, the concourse has always been really narrow in the upper deck. So there's some of that. But yeah, all the ex new clubs and all that. I mean, that's not appealing to a large portion of your fan base. And, but like I said, same thing could be said with what the Titans are going to build and when the Washington Commanders, whenever they get. Whenever they build their new stadium, it's gonna be same deal there. I mean, it's, we'll see how it plays out. But there wasn't a whole lot from that. And again, I'm not even, you've been much more critical of it than I have. I look at it and just, it's unfortunately the cost of doing business around the NFL. I mean, that's how this works. But there was very little about that that was terribly intriguing to me and say, wow, that sounds like something that I'd really be excited about as a fan. It's just the truth. I mean, I want to watch the game. I want to be comfortable while I watch the game, but I don't want to be price gouged. And so much of what that was just sounded like opportunities to charge me. And I don't mean me specifically, but as a fan, just sounds like many more opportunities for you to charge me much more money than you already have in the past.
And we'll talk more about that. Tom Kelce will be joining us on Monday at Wise Markets in Honeygo, former Maryland Stadium Authority chairman, who actually approved that money and was part of the legislature, part of all of that to get that money for the Ravens. Matter of fact, Sashi Brown went down with his pen and signed the money away. And Chad Steele pulled them away from the reporters down in Annapolis 9 months ago to talk about it at all. And now they're ready to talk about the money they have because they're ready to talk about how cold their beer is going to be and how much better the hot dogs are going to be inside the perimeter. So I'll be on the outside of the perimeter watching Sunday night football and the Ravens down in Jacksonville and then off to San Francisco. It's wall-to-wall football all weekend long this weekend and, of course, next weekend for the holiday. Luke will be monitoring all of it. We're going to be watching the Orioles, watching the stadium deal, playing some crab cake tour stuff and trying to talk about gratitude for the holidays. I had Bill Cole on. I gathered all of our friends and loved ones for the Dan Rodericks event last week. So we've already had a nice little holiday. I got some eggnog. I went to Royal Farms and I got the Cloverland eggnog late at night because I was out of milk and I had to make a run. I got some fried chicken as well. So big appreciation for that. Our friends at Cole Roofing as well. Bill Cole's taking a mulligan this week, but he's going to come back for the holidays next week. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Enjoy the games here this weekend, and stay with us. We're going to be out on social media. Luke will be on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, all those places. We'll have some great insights as the games go on, and we'll be here to recap it on Monday. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.